Welcome to the Thriving Birth Worker Podcast, a space for conversations about how you, the birth worker, can create not only a fulfilling and sustainable career, but a joyful and thriving life. I'm Erin Underwood, an educator, movement specialist, mother of four boys, and a total anatomy nerd. My passion is to see birth workers encouraged, supported, and empowered in their careers and life.
Hello, friends. Today, I'm digging into a topic that we covered last week with the amazing Nicole Jardin. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that episode, go ahead and jump on over to that episode right after this one. It's a perfect complement to everything we're going to be digging into today. But I'm going to be doing today's episode from my angle of a movement perspective. So we're going to be getting into all the sciencey things, understanding biologically how a period works, and what movement has to do with any of it. So then we'll discuss why blood flow moving through movement in the pelvis can have a really dramatic positive effect. So first, I wanted to let you know that I'm going to be opening up my Strong and Functional Pelvic Floor and Core class series again this week. I had such an awesome response last time I launched. I really wanted to open it up again for anyone interested. After just 1 week, received this testimonial. I am going to read it to you here. So I do a lot of yoga, and I have a good idea of breathing and form, but I continue to have incontinence struggles, mostly with sneezing. I've enjoyed the class so far. Your approach is just different enough and targeted in a new way, so I think it will be really helpful for me. I'm definitely feeling like I'm accessing my deeper pelvic floor muscles in a new way. Yay, thank you. You're very welcome. This just makes me so happy. My approach is very different than a traditional yoga or just a general stretching or exercise class. We dive deeper into understanding your body, how you move and breathe and live, and how you can support your pelvic floor and core through exercises, yes, but more importantly, how you live in your everyday life. Today, you'll get a tiny taste of what this series is like at the very end of this episode, when I lead you through a guided pelvic mobility exploration sequence. So make sure you stick around for that as well. This series was such a success this first time that I ran it online, I've decided to open it up again for a little over a week. So to find out all the details and to register or to share with your clients, you can find all the information under the show notes from today's episode number 24 at thrivingbirthworker.com. So, let us now dive into understanding how our period works. So I'm going to blast you with some anatomy information, and then we'll dissect it a little bit. So the uterus is an organ. We know that it's an organ, and it has two big layers. Now, here's where it gets a little tricky. We talk about how it has two layers, but really, there are muscular sets of layers, and then there's non-muscular sets of layers within the layers. So the myometrium is the outside of the muscle that gives the uterus its shape, and that's what you're used to seeing every time you look at a uterus. So the myometrium is actually three layers within that layer. So I don't know why people don't just say the uterus has five layers. We always just say it has two. So when you are thinking of shunting your blood to your more intimate parts, when you think of the work that is done through moving a baby out, that's being done by the myometrium. And it's interesting that the three muscular layers of the uterus, all just something to note, is they're all oriented differently. So the muscle fibers run in different directions. So that's pretty cool, actually, if you think about it. Now there's the base layer. So that base layer does not shed. And then there's the part that's deeper to that. And then you've got the uterus, which is a muscle, non-muscle layer. And then the innermost layer is the stratum functionalis, and that is the part that sheds. So that's the part you're losing when you have a period. So here's the process. This is the normal process of a period if you have a normal period. So right before you get your period, blood vessels that go to the endometrium contract. So they're shutting off oxygen to these linings. So the deepest lining, which is the stratum functionalis, so your body is basically withholding oxygen, which starves the tissues and kills it. Sounds lovely, right? So you are constricting your blood vessels to withhold the oxygen, and then that layer starts to die. In response to this death, your white blood cells are released to process and remove the now dying functional layer of the endometrium. That's called, okay, I'm going to try and pronounce this right, desquamation. Desquamation? Yes, let's call it that. That's when So you get your little chewing cells, and they're going up and removing it. The white blood cells, they secrete a digestive enzyme that are breaking the dead tissue up. So in that process, if you would imagine that you have a lining, but you have blood vessels to that lining, there's going to be some overlap. So there's an overlap with the blood vessel, and the tissues are sharing a common wall. So as the white blood cells are secreting this enzyme, as the enzymes are getting over, some of the enzymes are also getting on the blood vessels that feed that layer. So beneath the dying lining. And so you've got blood vessels now that have, they lose a little bit of their wall. So they're freshly exposed. So that is what's bleeding. So when the stratum functionalis is removed, there are some base cells that are left. So think of like if you were to flat your garden at the end of the year, like just kind of take out all of the plants. You're not really killing everything, even though it looks like you're killing everything. There are like base cells, basically little stumps of plants. So if you were like mow your yard really, really like short grass, something like that, but like all the way to the ground, you still didn't kill everything. So it's kind of like that. There are base cells, and from those base cells, the tissue can then repopulate. So your uterus is very similar to the idea of being able to repopulate. So you have a big hunk of this area that is dying and that's shutting off, but what you're left with is a potential for fresh new growth. And this is why we want that process to happen, because that process is part of what keeps that area healthy. And why when we do it every month, we then if we wanted to choose to have a child, we would have a very fresh, healthy lining ready to go. So now here is the twist. Dysmenorrhea, which is when your period doesn't go as smoothly as all of that. So when there's a delayed repair, basically. So now you have all these exposed blood vessels, and then what happens is that the body normally can go in and quickly fix the blood vessels, laying down a new layer of fresh growth, and a healthy body will that will do that process. And that process can be relatively fast. But when there's lots of bleeding for a long period of time, then your repair process is not functioning as it should. So then the white blood cells, sometimes the white blood cells don't stop breaking. They don't stop breaking down the functional layer. So they're chewing more of the blood vessels than what they're supposed to. So sometimes that amount isn't being regulated well either. So if you're looking at some of the statistics for dysmenorrhea, it's anywhere between 50 and 80%. Research has had a hard time like really nailing down a specific number. But it is a massive amount of women that report having really painful or heavy periods. So it's a really big deal. So while researchers have been able to establish using a Doppler radar is that women who are experiencing painful periods, they're not only having problems with blood flow around the uterus during their period. They are people who are having blood flow around they're having an issue with blood flow around the uterus at all times. So meaning the population of people with compromised blood flow is a population that experiences this issue. So when I think of things like endometriosis and dysmenorrhea, when you think of them as symptoms rather than a condition, it sometimes opens up our options and maybe what we're more willing to explore for support than just this is the way I am or this is the way my body is. So a period is a movement of blood. It's a movement of repair, but you could have large parts of your body that are more sedentary. They're not moving as well as they could. But maybe there are also parts around your body and around your uterus that aren't supporting the uterus as well as they could be. And so what we know about movement and blood flow and distribution and cellular adaptations to movement is that you can have large parts of your body that don't move. So it's really good to just remember that the function of the pelvis and the pelvic organs are a really good indicator of the entire ecosystem of how the body is working. And this is where when the period is not optimized, if we're experiencing a lot of pain or it's really heavy, or, you know, if we can go to Nicole Jardim's website and take a quiz and kind of dig into what are my symptoms and what should I even be looking for? Because some of us don't even know, like, what is a healthy period and what should I be looking for? Then if we have any little red flags, it's something that we can get really curious about and or our clients can get really curious about and start wanting to dive in a little bit deeper rather than just shrugging our shoulders and feeling like there's nothing we can do. Our bodies are outside of our control and we can't influence them, or receive what is happening as input or feedback. I like to see it as feedback. So if my body is in pain, it's just giving me feedback. It's communicating something to me. And if I don't know what it is, I can just start getting real curious and start exploring. And it's a really powerful way that I can then just get into a deeper relationship with my body. So I am a huge proponent and advocate of women deserving to understand their bodies. They deserve to understand how they work. We are not just mysterious creatures that are beyond understanding, and we deserve to feel strong and functional throughout our lives. So all of that, we've kind of laid a groundwork of how the period in general can work. How does movement come into play with this? So if the pelvis as a unit is immobile because of lack of use or of tension, that will impact how freely the blood can flow in that area, including into the uterus. So there's another amazing example of how movement matters. I have some amazing testimonials coming out of my own core and pelvic floor movement class with women who no longer experience period pain and digestion issues and more from adding functional movement to this area of the body. So I know that it works, and I know it works in my own life. I have had extremely uncomfortable periods. I mean, to the point where, you know, I couldn't go to class. I remember having to leave college. I just remember specifically one time I was in so much pain and I was in a biology lab in college. Like, that's not where you want to be when you're in pain, is dissecting something. And I remember I was like, I just can't do this. And I am a very driven type A personality. I am not going to just tap out for no reason. Like, I was doubled over in pain, and I get in my car and I'm driving home, and the pain hit me so bad I had to pull over to the side of the road. And I wound up passing out from the amount of pain that I had because it was just so extreme. And I came to a little bit later and was like, wow, that is not good. And so I was definitely someone who always had ibuprofen on me. I always was prepared that it was going to be miserable. And I know my body has been through a lot, so I can't say I did this one thing and that healed my body. But I can say now I'm older and I have had kids, and so my body and my uterus has been through a lot, but I do not experience any cramping or any amount of physical discomfort from my period. I mean, I get a little tired. Sometimes, you know, I can feel a little bit sensitive, but as far as cramping or physical pain, I do not experience that. And I know that my movement practice supports me in that. I can't say what percentage. I can't promise if you do these exercises and you'll never experience pain. But I do know that for myself and a lot of my clients, that functional movement with the pelvis really supports that blood flow to the area. And when we support it during the entire month, then the period, the period of time during your period, that just slipped out. I'm so funny. Can be a lot less painful. So At the end of this episode, I'm going to guide you through some intentional pelvic movement and mobility so that you can experience getting some lovely blood flow into your pelvis today. So don't worry, I'm not going to leave you hanging. Now, if you or your clients are experiencing really heavy or painful periods, I do recommend going after this with a very holistic approach. I am not someone to just throw one tool at someone and say, this is the one thing that anyone needs to heal their whatever. I'm just very anti that kind of marketing. But it's really rare that only one tool brings healing to anybody. But filling your toolbox with lots of tools and then going through the process of figuring out the dosage that's appropriate for you can be really empowering and really help you dive into a very deep relationship with yourself, knowing how you can support yourself. So for resources, I'm a huge fan of Nicole Jarnum. I just did a podcast with her, and her new book is coming out called Fix Your Period, and it's very step-by-step. It's very practical. I am not an affiliate. I'm not getting a kickback. This is just my genuine opinion of wanting to see people understand their bodies and have the tools to know how to advocate for themselves and know how to support themselves and to not feel broken and to not feel like this is just outside of their realm of understanding. We're all smart enough to understand our own bodies if we take a little bit of time to at least have a cursory understanding of how we work, how we function, where our hangups might be, and that kind of a mindset. So I understand that the healing journey can be really long and frustrating as you process trying to figure out what exactly is going to work for you, what tools. But I also know how empowering and fabulous it can be when you start to dial and refine that more and more and really start hitting your stride as far as feeling really a lot more functional and free in your body. I also do suggest adding a movement practice that is intentional and supports the pelvis through hamstring length and strength, through side hip engagement, through pelvic mobility, through core strength. I've spent a lot of time researching this area of the body and supporting myself and my clients. And I know that all these pain points and more are obviously going to be addressed in my 4-week series as well. So if you're looking to add function and mobility to your pelvic health regimen. So if you're looking to add functional movement to your pelvic health regimen, I would love to have you join me. Now, I'm going to transition into this pelvic mobility exploration sequence. So I do recommend that you can do this little sequence laying down in a safe and quiet place. So if you need to pause and come back at a little later time, you can do that. Just take a quick glance at the timestamp and then jump right back to this section of the audio. So I'm going to invite you to come to lie on your back in a comfortable place. So this can be on the floor with a pillow or a blanket, or this can be on your bed. This can be anywhere where you feel really comfortable. You can do this with lower lighting if you want to turn out the lights. If you want to have an eye mask on, this can be a down-regulating sequence as well as an exploratory pelvic floor sequence. So we're on the floor. We're laying on our backs. Six can be on the floor, on the bed. We're on our backs. Our knees are bent. Our feet are on the ground or whatever surface we're on. And we're going to start by just gently tucking and untucking our pelvis. So the tuck is where we're kind of tucking that tailbone away from the ground, pulling it away from the ground, pulling it more towards our nose. Our lower back is going to curve, and we're going to feel the whole of our lower back pressing into the ground or into the floor. And now we're going to gently go the opposite direction. We're going to untuck. So we're going to take our tailbone and we're going to reach it towards the ground. And that's going to bring a gentle arch into our back. That lower back especially is going to not be in contact with the ground, or at least not be as heavy. And we're going to slowly rock back and forth a few times, just noticing if there's any sticky spots. If there's any areas that feel less mobile, if there's one direction that's easier than another. If going 100% of your range feels cranky, especially in that arch. If you overarch and you feel a little bit of twinginess in your lower back, just maybe dial it back a little bit. Maybe go 85% of your range rather than 100%. Some of us like to go big and we can back off a little bit. Excellent. So now we're going to settle back into that more neutral where we're not arched or we're not tucked under. And I'm going to invite you to push into your right foot strongly so that your left hip becomes light. Push into your right foot strongly so that your right hip becomes light. There we go. So now I'm going to invite you to push into your right foot strongly so that your right hip becomes light. You don't have to lift that right hip off of the ground or off of the bed, but we're just making it light. So the left hip is a little heavier, the right hip is a little lighter. And so we're more rocking side to side here, but it's not a dramatic shift. And now we're going to release that and we're going to push strongly into our left foot so that our left hip becomes light. And our right hip is heavy. And we're going to slowly alternate back and forth, taking a breath or two on each side before switching to the next. We're noticing how the rest of our body responds to this movement. We're noticing if one side of our body is a little more natural to move and maybe another side feels a little more sticky. Excellent. Now we're going to come back to center again, where we're neither tucked nor untucked. We're not heavier on one side of the pelvis or the other. And now we're going to cycle through all four of those moves in a circle, and I'll talk you through that. So we're going to start in a tucked position where that tailbone is reaching more towards the ceiling and that low back is curved. And then we're going to push into our left foot so that our left hip becomes right, so we're reaching, the right hip is now heavy to the ground. Now we're going to move into an arched position, an untucked position, where the tailbone is reaching more towards the ground. And we're going to go to the opposite hip being heavy, so the left hip is now going to be heavy by pushing into that right foot, so the right hip is lighter. And we're going to finish the circle by coming back into that tucked position. So there, we just moved through a pelvic circle. We're going to go through that circle two more times, making sure we don't rush it, really going at a very intentional pace. And as you're cycling through this circle, I want you to notice what parts feel a little more natural to move through and what areas of the pelvis feel a little sticky. Or a little less uncoordinated, a little less coordinated. After the next circle, I'm going to invite you to go the opposite direction. So we'll start in that tucked position. And then we're going to make the left hip heavy by pushing into that right foot, making the right hip light. And then we cycle through towards the untucked position. That little bit of an arch in the back, the tailbone reaching down. And then the right hip gets heavy as the left hip becomes light through pushing through the left foot and then finishing that circle in that direction into the tucked position. So I invite you to cycle through that direction just a few times, going with your breath, but we're really noticing if we feel coordinated, if we feel uncoordinated, if we feel any twinginess, if there's any area of the body that's holding on to tension. So this is a really fabulous space as we're gently moving into these circles. Do I feel tension in my hips? Do I feel tension in my pelvic floor? Do I feel tension in my belly? How is that tension impacting my ability to move? I'm going to invite you to come back to center. And we're going to just finish out with a couple of gentle rocks back and forth, the tuck and the untuck. And then we're going to settle back into that neutral place. And we're going to finish with three deep, relaxing inhales. And we're going to relax the exhale out. So we're not going to force. We're not going to push the air out. We're just going to let it come out on its own. Inhaling, if you would like to pause on the inhale after you inhale and then exhale. And one more time. So that was our pelvic floor exploration. You can always come back to this at any point if that felt lovely, if you want to encourage that blood flow. I would love to connect with you further. You can feel free to follow me on any of my social medias. You can reach out to me via email. All the information for everything mentioned in this episode can be found under the show notes. I hope you all have a wonderful, lovely, relaxing, healthy blood flowing week. And I look forward to connecting with you next week. Goodbye for now.
The information and discussion provided on this podcast are not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have a medical concern, you should consult with an appropriately licensed physician or healthcare provider.